Support for Small Joys comes from the Columbus Foundation, celebrating the creativity that inspires and strengthens the Central Ohio community every day. More at columbusfoundation.org. Support also comes from the Greater Columbus Arts Council's Columbus Makes Art.
From WOSU Public Media, this is Small Joys. I'm Hanif Abdurraqib, and today my guest is Lydia Lovelace. If you are local to even Ohio or the Midwest region or beyond, you surely know Lydia's music. She's a singer and songwriter of immense talent who started her career here in the Ohio music scene as a teenager. And then after a few years of performing with her family, she went solo and released her first album in 2010. She has been releasing critically acclaimed records and touring extensively ever since, and she is coming up on the release of a new album very soon. When we talked, she was also gearing up for a new tour, and we started our conversation discussing her relatively new career as a recording studio engineer.
I just started audio engineering at a studio called Secret Studio, which is in Franklinton, which is the neighborhood I live in now.
Is engineering something slightly new for you, I take it, yeah?
Yeah, it's something I went to school for in July of last year. I got into it basically out of necessity because of the pandemic and recording at home, and I was like, I feel like all my friends' home recordings are much better than mine, so I should learn more what I'm doing. And then I sort of realized it could be something that I could do as work.
Franklinton is interesting to me. It's a neighborhood that I think is, depending on what part of it you're in, I think it's a neighborhood that's sort of brimming with fresh inspirations, so to speak.
Yeah.
Was that kind of move to Franklinton intentional for you in terms of art making, or was it just kind of like, this is where I'm going to be living now, and that's just, you know, are you someone who's not necessarily tied to the part of the city you live in as a tool of inspiration or joy or excitement or any of those things?
I think in a way it was both. I sort of lucked out getting a house that was going to be torn down to build apartments at first when I moved back here, and I was moving back sort of frantically anyway, and there was a house right across the street from the studio, which was a big reason why I moved back to Columbus to work there. And I just ended up really liking it there. I pretty much walk everywhere because I drive a giant van as my daily driver, and it's a pretty nice place to be and walk around and just sort of observe. I mean, obviously there's a lot to look at in Franklinton. There's a lot of murals and art everywhere.
Yeah. I would love to talk a bit about touring and getting back on stage, but before that, kind of how you occupied yourself during the kind of earlier parts of the pandemic. And I ask this because so many musicians I know and talk to, and, you know, they kind of had to relearn how to be in that world of that specific world of art making and figure out how to fit into it well, and how to continue feeling inspired and excited to create things, even if they were not putting them out in front of people. Mm-hmm. And so how did you kind of find yourself confronted with that, and how did you maneuver it?
Yeah, I remember reading interviews or doing interviews at the beginning of everything that are so cringe and embarrassing now, where I was like, oh, you know, I'm looking forward to just being in my house for a couple weeks. It'll be great. And it's embarrassing on many levels to think about saying that now. But I think at first, I was pretty diligent with like keeping up at writing and not overthinking, you know, where is this going to go? But God, my brain is all jumbled about that time anyway, because I know I put my record out in September of 2020, right, which means like I had already taken a decent amount of time off to write, which was something I thought I had the luxury to do before everything happened. And then it became this long slog of, you know, why am I doing this? And I know that we're all supposed to want to create art because we have to, and we have an innate desire anyway, but there does eventually kind of have to be some sort of release with everything to sort of clear the slate and start over. And just not getting that was very frustrating. And then I, you know, I'll find videos of myself tap dancing on my phone and I'm like, oh, I guess that was the thing I was doing for a while to distract myself from writing, which is what I could have been doing the whole time. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because there's a real, I think, confrontation that happens and happened and perhaps continues to happen for some folks where it is that feeling of like, I am creating art because I love art and it doesn't matter. And, you know, we say these things, but then when it really, when that is a real, you know, when that reality is very present, it feels a little different, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Are you, you know, one thing that's been interesting to me has been kind of seeing musicians talk about this publicly and talking to some myself about the shift in the music industry in terms of people, once again, because I don't think this is the first time this has happened, but people kind of once again coming to terms with the reality of what the industry demands out of folks and the what the returns of those demands are.
Yeah.
And if those are sustainable or tenable long term for people. And I was, you know, I, you know, Spotify doesn't pay anyone anything, and the rate at which one must tour to sustain themselves is at some levels, or it can be, unsustainable. Have you kind of had that self-reckoning where you're considering what it means to be a musician in 2023, if it is an art form that can be done out of kind of this, purity is ridiculous, but like, for lack of a better word, out of a pure sense of creating and feeling the joy of creating? Or is that work, does that work take on something significantly more now when you think about the actual labor of it?
Right. And I think I'm in a pretty privileged place, too, because I don't know, I've had a fair amount of success. I don't always feel like wildly successful, but there are certainly other artists who have had a rougher time lately than I have. And it is something that I've been thinking about a lot, like my silly songs and this job that I've basically made up is not sustainable sometimes. And it seems so whimsical and frivolous, but at the same time, I think it's caused me to be a little more collaborative, which is not something I used to be. I used to be very closed off with my art, and especially now, engineering makes me think about the fact that other people are coming to me with their money and their songs and asking me to make them sound good, and it feels insanely flattering isn't the word I guess I'm looking for, but it feels like a huge responsibility at this time when nobody's really making money off of it. But it does make it feel a little more pure, even though that sounds corny, I guess. It's actually made it almost more enjoyable lately. But that's a very recent development for me, to feel like this really renewed sense of hope, which has basically been maybe the last couple months that I felt that way. And I don't really know where it's coming from, to be honest. I wish I had some explanation of why I feel filled with joy and hope, but I honestly have no idea.
Sometimes it's best not to think about it.
Yeah, I think. I'm just gonna
sometimes
let
it's best just kind of be like, "This is, I'm going to embrace this while it's here, because it might not last very long."
Yeah.
Here's hoping it does, of course, but it's one of those things where it's like, I don't want to think, I don't want to, you know, tempt fate too much.
Yeah.
This kind of, the trust that you have, or you feel like you have, or this kind of, you know, people, other people bringing you their songs as a symbol of trust. Have you yet seen that kind of reflect in your own songwriting or the care that you take with your own songs, even the performing of your own songs? Or is it just kind of like, you know, are you two different artists when you're in this mode of engineering and in the mode of creating for yourself?
Yeah, I think they're very different moments for me. And I think for me, it's like I've always worked with people that I really trust to make things go smoothly, which is kind of why recording always seemed magic to me. I didn't realize how insanely difficult and sort of just finding the workflow balance. I always just thought engineers were magicians. I didn't realize that they were just really good at stuff, which is embarrassing. Yeah. But yeah, it for me has been a big thing to realize how much just being really chill in the studio is important and helps me to create better art for myself and for others. So it's helped me have to sort of work on my people skills, which I think it's high time that I did that. So,
did you feel yourself, like, I know, like, I did and a lot of people did. Did you feel yourself that you've regressed socially over the past couple of years?
Yeah, so much.
I don't know how to fix that. There's no real fix for that, I guess. Have you embraced it or have you tried to repair? Like, I went for a while where I was trying to repair it, mm-hmm. and now I've just kind of embraced where I am.
I think it's better to embrace the suck because, yeah, I worked so hard. I mean, I was so socially awkward when I was younger that, I mean, I couldn't order a coffee. I thought someone was going to scream at me if I ordered coffee the wrong way or something. So I worked on that for a really long time. And then just as I started to feel like a normal person, everything happened and I realized I was never going to get that back. So I just kind of have to be really lean into the awkwardness. And I don't know, I've always been kind of an oversharer anyway. So that's kind of gotten a lot worse, too. It's really hard to find the fine line.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if, just as a people, we're ever going to return to these kind of balances of, you know, I think social norms have been so disrupted that it's hard to figure out, like, what the proper approach to other people are. Particularly if you're, you know, like, I live alone mm-hmm. during much of the pandemic. I was, like, living alone. There's a way that, like, you become intimate with yourself that's kind of joyful and cool. Mm-hmm. But the flip side of that is like, oh, wait, but, you know, I haven't been talking to a person in who knows how long.
Yeah.
And you know, then you're confronted with a person and you're like, oh, no.
You forget. And for me, it's been weird because I basically never lived alone. There was a brief time in, I think, 2016 where I lived by myself. But I've always been in really long-term relationships, and this has been an entire year of living alone and sort of trying to readjust. And I'm just now getting to a point where I'm like, oh, this is pretty glorious, actually. But then I go to talk to people or make plans, and I just feel like a goblin. It's very strange. I don't know how to fix it.
So I'm interested always in people who are new to living alone because I've kind of made a life of it, for better or worse. How have you, because I'm sure it's ongoing, mm-hmm. Adjusted to it in ways that are not, or that serve you, or in ways that make it not feel crushing, particularly in winter? I feel like I'm not a good winter alone liver.
Yeah.
Winter's where it gets tough.
Yeah, I think I'm just now getting to a point where I can be a little more responsible with my time, and that's really embarrassing. But when you've spent your whole life living with people, it is hard to finally adjust to having a routine that doesn't revolve around someone else being around or not being around.
Yeah.
Like when someone goes away and you kind of fritter away your time doing all the silly things that you don't want someone to see, but then that's all the time, especially when you're an artist and don't really have like a day job per se, which has been me a lot of the time for the last year. But I'm just now finally getting to a point where I feel like I can get on a schedule and really use my time wisely. And of course I'm moving to a new house again for like the fourth time in the year.
Right, right.
That's been the biggest disruption, I think. But I don't know. I'm starting to really find joy in it, which I didn't think I was going to, even though I've always really wanted to live alone. And I find living with people somewhat tiresome. The reality of it was pretty difficult to adjust to.
Well, yeah, because it's good to hear like a noise in the house that is not your noise at some point.
Yeah.
There's a comfort in that. Like, if nothing else, I have a dog that sometimes, you know, makes noise that is not my noise. And I think that's good. But, you know, I do, you know, winter time is always the toughest because it's like, oh, gosh, the nights are so long.
Yeah.
It's wild. Are you, how, I know you've played some shows and you're getting ready to go back out on tour. Is it something that feels exciting to you, or is it a little daunting? Are you kind of like, oh, no, I have to go back out on tour? Or is it like, I can't wait to see people, I can't wait to play for people, I can't wait to, you know, the rigors of tour can be both appealing and unappealing, I think. But I think it depends on how you're taken to it. So how are you taken to it this time around?
I think right now I'm really looking forward to it. Like, I'm glad it's far enough away that I'm not stressed out. Because I think when touring gets like a month away is when I start to freak out. Like, oh, do I have clean underwear? And it's like, well, you have a month. Like, it's okay. Or what if I forget every, you know, instrument that I need to take? And I just get into a panic spiral. And being on the road, like physically in the car can be stressful for me because I have driving anxiety. But overall, I think it's really great. I have a really hard time being in one place all the time because of so many of my formative years being on the road. So now I don't really know how to be at home. So it's much easier once I just get out on the road and I'm performing and the songs keep getting better and better and the performances get tighter and tighter. And I mean, sleep deprivation, I guess, can be somewhat daunting, but I don't know. I just really like the feeling of, well, I really like performing live anyway, so that makes it fun. And then the tour that I have coming up is opening for the Drive-By Truckers, who are friends of mine.
Yes.
And it's always fun anyway, so it's definitely exciting, especially with new songs.
I was going to ask about new songs. I mean, what's your process? You've been writing songs for, you know, longer than some people have been alive entirely, you know, and for like a life where you've kind of, you know, your style has evolved in these great ways. How do you see your process as a writer, not as a performer necessarily, though I think the two, of course, can be intertwined, but as a writer, how have you found your process changing in ways that are maybe comfortable or revelatory for you?
I think with this last record that I just wrote, it was definitely the hardest I've worked on revising without sort of letting myself get away with like, oh, this song just fell out of me, you know, and I don't really want to work on it too hard and ruin the magic. This was an actually pretty rigorous process. And I was staying because I had just broken up with my boyfriend and didn't really have a house to live in. And I was staying on my friend Amy Turnsharp's couch, and she's a writer and she...
Yeah, poet.
Yeah. And she would force me to go somewhere and write. And she was like, don't come back until you have a song. I was like, okay, I'll do my best. So even if the song was not something that I would necessarily want to play for anyone, I kind of had to come home with something. Or I would be, I don't think she literally would have thrown me out, but I think she would have made me feel bad. Which was exactly what I needed, because it distracted me from feeling sorry for myself. And it made me write really good songs at the end of the day. I think everyone thinks their latest record is going to be their best, but I genuinely feel like these are the best songs I've ever come up with, and they're really concise, and I like that. And it made me more able to experiment in the studio musically than I normally would, because everything was so tight and revised after just months and months of writing and rewriting every single day, which is not something I would normally do. Normally I'm like, let it flow whenever inspiration strikes kind of person. And that was not the case.
Yeah. You know, I think like writing as a form of escape from feeling sorry about yourself is fascinating, because for me, it goes in, either direction where I kind of write myself further into the doom or I kind of just continue the work until I am, I don't know if numb is the word, but did you find it, did you find this process or this this approach a thing where you were kind of writing your way out of grief? So because the focus of the work allowed you to not feel it, and then by the time you got done with the work, you weren't feeling it anymore at all?
I think there was a measure
of that. Or were you writing yourself further into doom?
There were definitely days where I was, you know, wailing and weeping, but I do feel like it helped me a lot to write in the moment of something falling apart instead of waiting until after. And now there are still days where I'll just burst into tears, but it's not really about that specific thing. It's more just like, I have the capacity to grieve because I got everything cleared out and out of the way. So it wasn't, it's not just like this endless self-pity cry that I have, but I can make space to feel grief about other things, which I guess it's weird to say that that's a really nice feeling, but that's... I guess the writer's way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing, though, right? I think as writers, we have to kind of just, like, chip away at the existing thing, if for no other reason, because there are so many things to feel.
Yeah.
I feel like I don't want to, like, miss out on the potential to feel something. And if that kind of means, like, locking in on the misery for a little while.
Yeah.
That at least it kind of carves out a little bit of space to feel something else.
It does. It helps a lot. And I have recently started calling myself a romance novelist of songwriting. So my songs are kind of like I've figured out what I'm good at. And in the past like 6 months, I decided to kind of start to, I don't know, I wouldn't use the term date, but I've allowed myself to have feelings again. And there's been... I have like a much greater capacity to feel things because I got, I dealt with my crap, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's good. I feel like, you know, I have not yet guided. I mean, I'm able to feel things, but I'm like, I don't know if I want to put that feeling of things towards dating.
Yeah.
That feels frightening.
I've started to realize that it's maybe not the best time, but it was a fun few months, I guess.
I feel like it might not be the best time. It also is like maybe never the best time. Yeah. I'm not an expert, but it feels like it's like probably never the best time because, I don't know, broadly, people are odd and life is not, well, depending on who you ask, life is either too long or not very long. and like there's never like a good time. So, you know, cheers to you for making the space in that way. Do you have a plan for the new album coming out, or do you have a release date, or is it kind of just still?
I don't have an exact release date. I'm not sure how direct I can be about it, but I'm thinking the fall is when things are going to start cooking.
Is this also going to come out on your label? Are you still running the label?
No, I think that was sort of a thing that I did to get through the pandemic, but this one will come out on a label on someone else.
I thought it was cool. I mean, I don't know what it takes to run a label. It seems like a lot of labor for perhaps minimal excitement, but yeah. I was excited. but I also know that like for an artist who is also working mm-hmm. and writing songs and putting out songs and touring, like running a label may be like the one thing too many.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot of stuff that I'm not good at too. But at some point I would like to start doing that for real. That was more of a like got to get these songs out situation, but I would really like to help people put their songs out, and I think I'm kind of taking the steps towards that anyway with like working in a studio and just being more aware of what other people need from a label and an engineer and a producer and all those things. So it is something I'd like to look into again. Maybe someday when I'm less weighted down by stress. I don't know.
I mean, are you optimistic about, I mean, I kind of touched on this in a vague way earlier, but to ask it plainly, I mean, are you optimistic about the future of music as a viable art form? And I don't mean, you know, I think, of course, everyone will always be making music, mm-hmm. but I, the one thing I think about often as someone who consumes a lot of music and enjoys consuming a lot of music is the rate at which albums are being released seems to be greater and greater and greater.
Right.
And so there's more and more music being pushed into the world, which is good. But then I think it becomes a question of access, like how are people learning about new music? And so for me, it seems like there is a groundswell that keeps growing of music being released, but fewer spaces where people can learn about new artists who are not, say, the like biggest 5% of artists in the world.
Yeah, it is pretty daunting.
So I'm wondering what your level of optimism is about, music as something that is sustainable for folks, not just, you know, makers, but also lovers of music. It has to be sustainable for lovers of music too.
Yeah, it does seem really overwhelming as a listener and as an artist sometimes. I wish I had like a better answer for that question. I think like most things, everything hits a breaking point and sort of has a reset, but I don't know if that's an option for music because it's so out of control and there's so many ways to sort of take advantage of it. If you are the kind of person who wants to take advantage of artists, it's really easy in this day and age to do so. So I really don't, I don't know. I want to say it's going to be one of those things that spirals out of control and then things sort of reset and things become pure and fun again. But I don't know. I really don't know. I wish I had a more optimistic answer. But I don't know.
Well, I'll ramp us down with perhaps a space for optimism. And it's locally.
Okay.
Music locally. You've been on Columbus's music scene or Ohio's music scene for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also something that has shifted. But do you still, because the scene is somewhat insular, not necessarily in a bad way. I don't think, insularity is necessarily bad.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's a bit insular and it affords people a lot of overlap, what have you seen, at least here, in the local sense, that gives you some movement towards positivity and excitement? There are a lot of local bands I love, but more than that, I think that what I've gotten to see is a lot of people, like when I was coming up, it seemed like anyone who had some instruments and some friends could at least give it a shot, and it feels like that is returning in a way.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm seeing people start bands with each other that I wouldn't expect. Or like things are getting less genre driven. I remember when I was younger, especially, there was a lot of like Americana sort of like rage in the scene that I was in. And I've sort of seen that diminish. I think people like were really like country purists for a while, and I'm glad to see that sort of going away locally and kind of universally. But I feel like I do see a lot of I've seen like younger people just starting bands again, and that's exciting. And especially like working at the studio and working with people who've put together festivals, like I got to help out a little bit at She Burns Bright, and that was really cool to see like so many artists that I might not know about or projects that I might not necessarily check out otherwise. I hope any of that makes sense. I can be kind of insular myself, so.
Yeah. I mean, I think we all, at this point, get permission to be as insular as we choose, I believe.
Yeah, I think after the last couple of years, that was just kind of inevitable anyway.
Yeah, being insular is the new being extroverted, I suppose. Lydia, I'm curious about any kind of non-musical, even like kind of joyful minutia that you're using to sustain yourself. So is there anything you're tinkering with in your life beyond music that kind of gets you through the days?
So I have a new project that I'm pretty excited about, but I can't say that it's non-musical, but it is more tinkering than I'm normally into. But I'm trying to fix up the Fender Rhodes at the studio I work at, which is somewhat of a mechanical project that I'm not that kind of person, but it's become really interesting to me and learning all the different parts. I'm also right now trying to delve back into performing stand-up comedy, which is something I've only done twice, and it's absolutely terrifying, but I think that's something that I need to give it a shot again, because I don't know, I really like making people laugh. I'm kind of a jerk in that sense. I like getting a good laugh at any expense, so I don't know. I'm pretty excited about it, but terrified.
Stand-up comedy, I think, takes like a real immense level of bravery. I couldn't do it. I also think it just takes a lot of skill to be able to, you know, write an arc of jokes and embed them in like a narrative that holds people's attention. So I'm, that's a real skillful pursuit, and I'm rooting for you.
Thank you.
Lydia Lovelace, thanks so much for talking to me. I look forward to the new album. I look forward to hearing the new work. And, you know, whenever tour's running around coming around in April, you know, until then, be safe and as joyful as possible. But also, I hope the road treats you well when you take to it.
Thank you so much.
Don't call me victim, sister, or your child bride. I've been somebody's woman on the side. Just take me for what I already am. Honey, make me feel like a man. 'Cause there's never been a better time to be alive.
It started as a normal day.
What if the truth about the greatest tragedy of your life was kept secret from you?
Huge explosion occurred.
This is the story of a scandal deliberately buried in the chaos of the Iraq War.
What really just happened?
Listen to NPR's Embedded podcast and its latest series, Taking Cover.
At the end of every episode, I take some time to share one of my small joys. And this time it is the fact that I've been traveling a lot, which in and of itself is not necessarily a small joy. I actually, I don't love the rigors of travel. I often like being in the places I am once I get there. But the machinery of travel, the airports or hotels or these kind of things, they don't really excite me that much. I do like being in cities with people I love. I do like getting to see people I love who I don't normally get to see. But the travel part of this all is not actually the small joy itself. The small joy is, you know, I was stagnant for a while, like a lot of people. I was home very often. And even when I eased back into travel, say, last year, it was really measured. And so I didn't have these very big exits and returns to the city. And there are a couple of things I love that constitute small joy. So I'm going to drop two that roll into one. One is I simply like flying back into Columbus. I've always liked flying back into Columbus. It's similar to how I feel about driving back into Columbus, but flying back into Columbus does a bit more for me because, like everyone, or like a lot of people, I think, I enjoy the way a plane descends into a familiar place, a place that is your home. And depending on where you are flying in from, I've been able to kind of chart out what version of Columbus or what part of Columbus I'm going to see, depending on what part of the country I'm flying back in from. If I am flying back in from the west, for example, I know I'm going to likely get a glimpse of Crew Stadium, old Crew Stadium, historic Crew Stadium. And I know if I'm flying in from the east, we'll pass over the Horseshoe and I can see the Arena District. These are things that I don't necessarily, you know, have any kind of massive connection to, except for the Crew Stadium, of course. But I don't have this massive emotional connection to the Arena District otherwise. But I like seeing it from the sky. It signals that I'm coming home. And the second part of that is now I get to come home. My dog is excited to see me. My dog, Wendy, who for a long time was just very used to me being home and very certain that I would always just be there or only be gone for a short while. And there's something about the excitement after you've been gone for a few days of a dog really thrilled to see you and settling back into a familiar routine you have together. And that has been really renewing for me to remind myself that, you know, like I say, I live alone except Wendy. Wendy and I have lived alone for years, a couple years now. And it's really great to have a living being thrilled with your entrance. And that's, you know, that's one of the most exciting things that I get to return home to. So those are my small joys this week. Small Joys is a production of WOSU Public Media and part of the NPR Network. The show is produced and edited by Michael DeBonis. Sound engineering by Eric French. Nick Hauser is the Chief Content Director of Digital Media. Thanks to Leticia Wiggins for editorial support, and thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate it on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and we'll be back next week with more Small Joys.